during which they slept, were uneventful, with the one exception that the stuck rat finally gave up its screeching and died. No light shone through the tiny window at the top of his cell. He looked into the other cell. Greeley and Shorty were still sleeping. He put the threadbare blanket over the dead rat in his bed. He let himself out of his own cell and into Greeley's. "Wake up!" he whispered, nudging Greeley with his foot. Greeley's eyes opened wide immediately.
"Goddess of my heart's desire, we dance as silhouettes against the autumn moon."
Tim cleared his throat. Greeley shook the sleep out of his head and looked up at him.
"Oh, it's ye. Time to wake up, is it?"
He stood up and Shorty turned over, pulling more of Greeley's blanket onto himself. Tim shook Shorty's shoulder. Shorty's red eyes opened and he hissed. He bared his rotten teeth at Tim. It was more frightening than the rats had been. Tim jumped back and yelped, which startled Shorty in turn. He shook his head, rubbed his eyes, and remembered where he was.
"Sorry about that," said Shorty. "I was having a dream."
"What the fuck about?" said Tim, backed up against the wall and still panting. Shorty frowned.
"Dunno," he said. "Don't remember. Ducks, maybe?"
Tim got his heart back under control and then positioned the rat on Greeley's bed as best he could to resemble Greeley. It wouldn't pass more than a rudimentary inspection, but if they were still there by the time inspections were taking place, then they would have already failed.
"This will have to do," said Tim, after he finished covering the rat's face with the blanket. "Ready for some waiting?"
Greeley and Shorty shrugged. Tim walked up to the stairs leading to the exit door. The doorway itself was about 6 feet up. The steps leading up to it were only as thick as the door, leaving a space on either side between themselves and the wall.
"Greeley," said Tim, "come here."
Greeley came forward, and Tim led him into the space on the right side of the steps.
"Crouch down a little. Yes, like that. Very good."
He turned back to Shorty.
"What do you think?"
"About what?"
asked Shorty.
"Can you see him?"
"Of course I can see him," said Shorty. "He's right there."
"Oh,"
said Tim. He bit his lower lip.
"Try crouching down a bit more," he ordered Greeley.
"Like this?"
Tim turned to Shorty.
"How about now?"
"What about now?"
Tim sighed.
"Can you see Greeley now?"
Shorty stared dumbly at Tim for a moment. He scratched his head until the light of recognition shone in his eyes. He gave an embarrassed cough.
"Perhaps I should have mentioned my dark vision."
"What?"
"I can see in the dark."
Tim rolled his eyes.
"Oh, for fuck's sake," he said. "Greeley, come on out of there. Shorty, you go in there."
Shorty stood in the shadowy space between the steps and the wall.
"What do you think, Greeley?" asked Tim. "Can you see him?"
"Nar," said Greeley. "He's pretty well hidden in there, I'd say."
Tim ran the plan through in his mind.
"Okay, good."
"So that's the plan, is it?"
asked Shorty.
"We just duck back in the shadows, hope they all walk in without seeing us, and then try to duck out while they're not looking?"
"Just about," said Tim.
"Oh,"
said Shorty. He swallowed.
"Okay."
Tim closed his eyes and offered a smug grin.
"There is one more thing I haven't mentioned yet."
"What's that?"
asked Shorty.
"It's nothing unless you've got some string,"
said Tim.
"I think I can come up with something,"
said Shorty. He scurried down the hall to his room and emerged a few minutes later with a spool of thread.
"Will this do?"
"Perfect,"
said Tim. He went back to his cell, found the bones he'd used to pick the lock, and started working on the door of the cell where the giant rats were being raised.
"I've got a key, you know,"
said Shorty.
"Oh, yeah,"
said Tim.
"Right, good idea."
He unlocked the cell door, careful not to move it in or out, lest the rats know it was open. A couple of them snarled at him, but most of them barely noticed he was there. He carefully tied one end of thread around a bone and wedged it into the lock.
"Hmm,"
said Tim, rubbing his chin.
"Not bad."
He looked at Shorty.
"I don't guess you have a paintbrush down here."
"No."
"Not a problem,"
said Tim, walking back to his cell. He lay down on the floor and reached under the bed until he fished out what remained of the arm he'd removed from the rat in his bed. He stood up, removed the blanket from the rat corpse, and stabbed a new hole in it with his dagger.
"I think he's dead,"
offered Greeley.
"Thanks,"
said Tim. The blood was thick and dark, but still liquid. He cut an opening large enough to dip the severed limb into. Nice and sticky. He took it back to the rat cage and pasted the thread along the cell's crossbar all the way back to the edge of the wall.
"All right,"
said Shorty.
"Kind of gross, but it should get the job done."
Tim nodded, satisfied with his work.
One question, though,
Shorty continued.
Why wasn't this part of yesterday's preparatory work?
Because I only just thought of it just now, answered Tim.
So?
Shorty paused and scratched his head.
When I asked you before if your entire plan consisted of us hiding out in the shadows and hoping all the guards would walk by without noticing us?
Yeah.
Up until a few minutes ago, that was your entire plan.
That's right.
And you thought that was a good enough plan to gamble all of our lives on, did you?
Is being dead any worse than being stuck in here?
I've only ever explored one of those two options, said Shorty. And I'm not in any hurry to explore the other one.
I think we've got a good shot at this. If we all do...
Tim was interrupted by the sound of voices on the other side of the door, and then what he guessed was the sound of the crossbar being lifted out of the way.
Shit! He whispered. They're coming! Greeley, get over here! Shorty, go to the other side!
Each of them did what they were instructed to do without hesitation. Tim and Greeley crouched back into the darkness as deeply as they could. Tim ran his thumb and forefinger together to confirm the feel of the thread between them. The door creaked open.
Prisoners, stand and be counted,
shouted Captain Righteous. Having received no response at all, the captain stomped down the stairs. Two of his subordinates followed him halfway down.
Shorty,
he bellowed. Shorty cowered even deeper into the shadows, but made no sound.
Damn him and his stupid soundproof room,
muttered the captain as he stomped toward the other end of the hall, six of his men following behind. Tim recognized one of them as Diego. The other five were all likely named Level 1 guard. Greeley looked down at Tim. Tim shook his head. Not yet.
If he wants to be deaf, I'll rip those giant ears off his ugly head.
The captain marched swiftly down the corridor without so much as a glance into any of the cells. Diego followed behind more slowly, raking a small metal club across the bars of the cells.
Wake up, you lazy shits! Don't want to sleep through your last couple of hours in this world, do you?
By the time Captain Righteous had made it into Shorty's room, the rest of his men had come to the prisoner's cells.
Has Greeley put on weight?
One of them asked.
What's that sticking out of the little guy's bed?
Asked another.
It looks like a tail.
Round, you fools! They're getting away!
The soldiers all turned toward Shorty's room. The captain was just coming out of it, shouting and looking past them.
Turn around, you fools!
He repeated. The men turned back toward Tim. Greeley and Shorty hurried up the stairs. Tim paused just long enough to give them the finger.
What do you suppose that means?
The rearmost guard asked. The others didn't bother to contemplate Tim's gesture. They drew weapons and charged, but were intercepted by a horde of dire rats swarming out of their cage. Tim bolted up the stairs as fast as he could. Greeley and Shorty closed the massive wooden door behind him. It took the combined strength of the three of them to lift the crossbar back into place, blocking the door shut. There was a brass plaque on the front of the crossbar. It read, Dungeon. Authorized personnel only.
Now what do we do?
Asked Greeley. Tim looked around. There was only one way to go, and that was up a full flight of stairs, ending at another wooden door. He raced to the top of the stairs, hoping that the door wouldn't be locked. To his amazement, it wasn't. He'd expected giant stone walls hung with tapestries and suits of armor standing decoratively at the entrances to corridors. Instead, this place kind of reminded him of his grandmother's house. He was in a small room with white painted walls. There was a rocking chair in the corner and a table with an oil lamp. Oil lamp.
We could burn the place down, suggested Tim.
Greeley and Shorty looked at one another and then back at Tim.
What for?
Asked Shorty. Tim thought.
I don't know, he admitted. That's just something we could do if we were so inclined.
Maybe we should focus on getting out of here,
suggested Shorty.
Good idea, said Tim. Let's go.
There was only one door out of the room, and it opened into a short hallway. Opposite the door was a bedroom, and just down the hall there looked to be a... Tim stopped, sniffed the air, and turned around.
Kitchen, he said.
Eh?
Said Greeley.
I'm fucking starving, said Tim.
He tiptoed down the hall, following his nose to what smelled like freshly baked bread. He drew his sword silently from its scabbard and peeked around the corner. A man in a robe was standing at the counter, looking out the window and drinking a cup of coffee. The first thing Tim noticed about the man was his long, shiny, clean hair. It looked like it should be the star of a woman's shampoo commercial. His neatly trimmed beard was also shiny clean, complete with a thick mustache, waxed to points sticking out at each end. He didn't seem to notice Tim.
Ahem, said Tim.
Ha!
Screamed the man with the shiny long hair. He jumped, and a great deal of coffee sloshed over the sides of his cup.
Shut your mouth or I'll cut your dick off, said Tim, pointing his sword.
He was just the right size for a fully grown human man to take such a threat very seriously.
Who are you?
The man looked bewildered at the question.
Why, I am Palin, lord of this manor, he said. And you must be the butcher I was told about, who sliced the head off of one of my men.
Yes, Tim sighed. I cut your man's head off. He was kind enough to let me climb up his body and then stand there patiently while I worked away at his neck with a handsaw.
Never mind that, said Lord Pahelin. How did you escape my dungeon?
Tim looked around the corner where he had emerged into the kitchen from. Greeley and Shorty both looked hesitant to show themselves. Tim raised his eyebrows inquisitively at them. They looked at each other, shrugged, and stepped out into the open.
Wretched traitors!
Pahelin hissed at them.
How can they be traitors? Asked Tim. Weren't they prisoners?
Pahelin stopped to consider this.
Well, they've been with us for so long, he said. They felt like family almost.
Well, said Tim, as long as we're on the lam, we're going to steal a bunch of your shit.
He brandished his sword at Pahelin, and without taking his eyes off him, groped around on a nearby table until his hand found an apple. He bit off a huge chunk of it, chewed it up, and savored the feeling of it going down to his eager stomach.
Greeley, Shorty, take whatever you can find. Food, weapons, money, whatever. Hurry up.
Greeley and Shorty collected a few loaves of bread, some dried meat, a basket full of apples, and a large bread knife.
Let's go,
said Shorty, waving the bread knife toward the door.
Shouldn't we tie him up first? Asked Tim.
With what?
Oh, yeah. All right.
Tim followed Shorty and Greeley out of the kitchen door and into the morning air outside.
Chapter 11. Julian looked up at the white moon, just the one, fading into the lavender sky.
The sun will be coming up soon, he said to whoever was listening.
You'd better run along now, Dave said to Miguel. It's probably best that you leave town altogether and try to sell your shit somewhere else.
Right, said Miguel. Good luck with...
He stopped to think.
Well, with whatever it is that you're doing.
He climbed up to his place, the head of his cart, and took hold of the reins. Dave, Julian, and Cooper offered a friendly wave as he rode out of sight around the corner of the saloon.
Should we have just let him go like that? Asked Julian.
What difference does it make?
Asked Cooper.
He could tell the guards about us or something.
They're about to find out about us anyway.
That's true, said Julian.
He tipped up the wide brim of his new hat.
As far as I could see when we came in, there was only one guard at the entrance to the Lord's Manor.
He risked a peek around the corner, just in time to see the guard in question suddenly jerk his head up in attention and run back toward the front door of the house.
He's going inside, he said. Now's our best chance.
The three of them ran as quietly as they could, which wasn't very, toward the entrance of the big house. Inside, they could hear shouting.
Best to rush in there while their guard is down, suggested Cooper.
Julian looked to Dave. Dave shrugged. They made a tiptoeing dash toward the front door. Dave made a grab at the handle, but Cooper caught him by the wrist.
Stop,
said Cooper. Dave looked up at him.
Why?
I need to rage.
What?
Asked Julian. Cooper shut his eyes tight and balled up his fists.
What is he doing? Julian asked Dave. Barbarians have a special rage feature to their class, Dave explained. Once per day, he can go into a rage, and he gets a boost to his strength and constitution scores.
Cooper whispered a mantra to himself.
I'm very angry. I'm very angry.
Julian looked at Dave dubiously.
He doesn't look very enraged to me, he observed.
Dave smiled and shuddered at the same time. After a hard swallow, he nodded back at Cooper.
Look again.
There was no hint of white left in Cooper's eyes. The few gaps that weren't crawling with blood vessels were tinted pink. Snot ran freely from both nostrils and drool from either corner of his mouth, and it was abundantly clear that he didn't give a fuck about any of that. Cooper punched a hole in the door, which seemed to piss him off even more. He tore at the hole he made with both hands, ripping large, jagged chunks out of it.
Julian and Dave stood back to avoid the flying debris. Cooper entered the house with a roar that might have either been triumphant or a reaction to getting a spear shoved in his eye. Julian ducked inside, with Ravenous flapping in behind him. Cooper stood on one side of a puddle of coffee and what looked to be the remains of a broken mug. On the other side of the puddle stood two terrified men. One was the guard from outside, the other was a man with shiny black hair, a fancy mustache, and a bathrobe. The latter was momentarily distracted from his terror when Julian walked into view.
"Where did you get that serape?"
he asked. Cooper raised his axe in the air and screamed again. Both men raised their hands in petrified surrender. He looked like he might bring it down on one or both of them. Julian didn't dare try to stop him. Dave dared.
"Cooper!" he shouted. "Stop! Don't kill anyone! We need to ask...
Oh, hello!"
The man in the bathrobe stepped back behind his guard when Dave waddled in with his giant mace in hand. Both of their gazes followed the head of the mace down to Dave's furry, leopard-patterned forearm. Dave took the mace in his left hand and hid his right hand behind his back. For a moment, the only sounds in the room were Cooper's hard, snot-bubbled breathing and the light flapping of wings as Ravenous kept his balance perched on the back of a chair.
"Could you tell us where the prisoners are kept?" asked Julian.
Neither the man in the bathrobe nor his guard dared lower their hands. They each pointed one finger toward the hallway.
"Just,"
his voice shook with each word,
"just down the hall."
"Second door on the right," offered the guard.
"Thank you,"
said Julian. He held up his arm and Ravenous perched on it, facing him.
"You stay here and keep an eye on these two," he said. "If either of them move, you come and get me. We'll be right back as soon as we find our friend."
"Very good, sir."
"Thank you,"
said Dave with a small, awkward bow.
"Yeah, thanks a lot,"
said Cooper. Julian looked at him. His eyes were back to normal. He wiped the drool off the corners of his mouth with his forearm.
"Feeling better?"
"Yeah,"
said Cooper.
"I'm cool. Let's go get Tim."
They found the door without any problem. A plaque on the crossbar holding it shut read, "Dungeon, authorized personnel only."
"I can hear something inside," said Julian, putting his ear to the door. "Sounds like a fight."
"Shit,"
said Cooper.
"What's wrong?" asked Julian.
"I just blew my rage."
"What are you talking about?"
"Barbarian rage,"
he explained dispiritedly.
"I only get to use it once per day, and it's finished at the end of the encounter. I thought we were heading into a big battle back there, but it was just some random guard and a dude with shiny hair."
"So what are you saying?" asked Julian. "You can't fight?"
"Oh, I can fight,"
said Cooper.
"It's just that my heart's not in it. I can't get good and riled up beforehand."
"There are men in there who may be trying to kill your friend," argued Julian. "That doesn't get your heart pumping?"
Cooper shrugged.
"I'm as cool as a cucumber,"
he said.
"Want to feel my pulse?"
He offered his wrist.
"No thanks," said Julian. "Could you just move the bar off the door, please?"
"All right,"
said Cooper. With one hand, he lifted the thick wooden beam out of its supports and tossed it to the side. Julian paused and turned to Dave.
"Maybe it's best if..."
"Get out of the way,"
said Cooper.
"I'll go in first."
He opened the door. The scene beyond the open door was absolute bedlam. Men in armor fighting giant rats. Limbs and swords were flailing around wildly. 5 rats lay dead on the stone floor, and at least one of the soldiers was down. If he wasn't dead, he was close. The only thing keeping the remaining rats from finishing him off was the distraction of other men who were trying to kill them.
"It's them!"
shouted a man who Julian took to be the leader.
"You will pay dearly for your crimes!"
"I don't see Tim,"
Cooper said.
"Should we go?"
"What have you done with our friend?"
Julian shouted. The man stabbed a rat, tried to move forward, but was caught in the calf by another one. He roared in pain and kicked it away.
"You'd do better to concern yourself with what I'm going to do with you rather than what I'm going to do with that little shit when I catch up to him again."
Julian stood with Dave in front of Cooper, looking down the stone steps into the battle taking place in the corridor below. He was uncomfortably aware of what he was supposed to do at a time like this.
"Come on," said Dave. "He's not in here. Let's just go."
"Hang on," said Julian.
"Let's give diplomacy a shot. He might know where Tim went,"
he shouted back to the man in charge.
I noticed you and your men seem to be in a pickle, he said. Would you like some help?
One of the other guards caught a rat in the throat with a lucky jab of his sword, and the captain kicked another one so hard that it stopped moving.
If you really want to help me, said the captain, you can all slit your own throats while we finish off these god's damned rats.
Listen, said Julian, we aren't very comfortable with killing people, but we really need to find our friends, so...
Ha! Sneered the captain. That mongrel beast behind you seemed comfortable enough with killing one of my men.
That was sort of an accident.
An accident?
The captain stopped attacking rats for a moment. His chin jutted out, and the corners of his mouth pulled down in a tight scowl, as if he was trying to look angry, but his eyes flickered a betrayal of confusion and disbelief.
He chopped his fucking head off!
Right, said Julian, lowering his head. I know what it must look like to you.
He paused to search for the right words.
But you see, we were just playing a game, and Cooper thought that would be funny.
Dave elbowed Julian sharply in the arm.
Dude, you call that diplomacy? He whispered. They're going to fucking murder us.
Men! Shouted Captain Righteous. Kill the monster and the dwarf. Leave the elf for me.
The soldiers abandoned the three rats, who were still trying to bite through their armor, and turned toward Julian, Dave, and Cooper, weapons raised. Cooper and Dave also readied their weapons. Julian reached into a small pouch on his belt and pulled out a pinch of white hair clippings.
Horse!
He shouted, waving one arm in the air and blowing the hair clippings out of the palm of his other hand. After a sound like a single clap of hands, accompanied by a small flash of light, the two opposing groups found themselves looking at opposite ends of a very surprised-looking horse.
What the?
Was all Dave had time to say before he flew backwards into Cooper, who caught him but was unable to keep his balance. They fell backwards into a cranny between the steps and the wall. Dave had a horseshoe-shaped dent in his breastplate. The horse bucked and whinnied. The soldiers stepped back, and the rats retreated into Shorty's room. Julian was still trying to pull a bewildered Dave off an equally bewildered Cooper when Ravenous flapped into the room.
Julian! Said the raven with alarm in its voice. They're coming! You need to get out here right now!
I can't leave my friends here, said Julian. I'll try to get everyone out, but you need to go find Tim.
Who's Tim?
Asked Ravenous.
He's the guy we came to rescue, said Julian. He must have escaped before we got here.
Where do you think he went?
I don't know, said Julian. Go back to where I summoned you. Look for him there.
Ravenous flew out of the dungeon just before the man in the bathrobe reached the door. Cooper squirmed under the weight of Dave, and Julian pulled on Dave's arm, but it was no good. They were jammed in that little space pretty good. Ravenous flew toward the door, and the man in the bathrobe raised his arms to cover his face. The effort wasn't enough. Ravenous managed to rake a talon across his face on the way out. The man screamed and flailed his arms ineffectually at the bird.
Nice one, Ravenous!
Julian shouted after him as he flew out of sight. The man in the bathrobe glared down at Julian with fury in his eyes and blood running down from three slashes in his cheek. Fury gave way to shocked confusion when he spotted the rear end of a horse for the first time. He peered further into the ill-lit corridor, past the horse, at the guards.
"Give us a knock when you've finished this, whatever this is," he commanded.
He stepped out backwards, continuing to stare at the horse, and closed the great wooden door behind him. Julian knew he didn't have the time to stop them from locking the door, so he didn't bother to try. His first priority was to get his friends upright again while the people that were trying to kill them were still distracted by the horse he'd summoned. As he pulled Dave to his feet, he heard the crossbar clunking into place on the other side of the door. They were trapped.
"I've fucking had it with this job!" shouted the leader.
He shoved his sword into its scabbard, threw down his hands in disgust, and walked into one of the cells. A dead rat was in the bed. It was covered by a ratty old sheet and looked to be sleeping. He kicked it off the bed and sat down.
"This isn't what I signed up for!"
He looked over at Julian, who had finally gotten the rest of his party to their feet.
"Hey, elf!" he shouted. "You want a truce? You got one!"
"Huh?"
said Cooper, only just coming around to where he was.
"Huh?"
said one of the subordinate guards. The leader glared at the soldier who questioned him.
"Do you think I get paid enough to be locked in a dungeon to fight like a dog in a pit?"
"But they killed Thaddeus,"
the guard argued, but didn't quite sound like his heart was in it.
"Thaddeus was a dick," replied the leader. "Can you honestly say that you miss him?" "Well, no, but..."
He gave up and leaned back against the cell bars. The remaining guards removed another dead rat from the bed in the cell across from where their leader was sitting and put their wounded comrade on it. He was bleeding profusely from the lower leg.
"Maybe we should go help him," Julian whispered to Dave, "as a token of goodwill."
"Maybe I would," Dave hissed back at him, "if you get that fucking horse out of my way."
"Oh yeah, sorry about that."
Julian waved his arm and repeated his command word.
"Horse!"
The horse disappeared back into a pinch of horsehair. As soon as the horse disappeared, the rats charged out of Shorty's room. One of them locked eyes with Dave, who looked to be in no mood for it. Dave grabbed his mace with both hands and readied himself.
"Fucking animals,"
he muttered.
"I am so fucking sick of fucking animals today."
The rat lunged up at him, and he swung his mace with all the strength he could muster. Everyone in the dungeon winced as the sound of a crunch coincided with a giant rat body flipping up through the air and against the bars of a cell. The other two rats were less bothered about their fallen brother, and one of them had its eyes set on Julian. Julian had no more love for these creatures than Dave did, but what he did have was a lot more fear of them. He yelped and ran into one cage that had been holding neither prisoners nor rats, and tried to close the door behind him. It required a key to lock, so he just held it closed as best he could with one hand, and started to wave the other one around in the air. The rat's snout was poking through two of the bars, and it caught the bottom of Julian's robe.
"Methylchloroisothiazolinone!"
Julian shouted, and pointed his free hand down at the rat. A sparkling arrow sputtered out of his fingertip and burned into the rat's side. It shrieked and let go of Julian's robe as a charred hole in its flesh smoldered and smoked. Cooper finished it off with a good solid kick to the other side. Its body flew down the hall, into the room at the far end of the hall, where it landed strangely without a sound. The last rat tried to bite Cooper, but barely managed to scratch his boot. Cooper swung his axe down and chopped the creature in two.
"You all right?"
Dave asked Cooper.
"Yeah, I'm fine. Go see if you can do anything for that guy."
Dave set his mace down on the ground, raised his hands up in a gesture of peace, and started making his way slowly and cautiously toward the cell with the injured guard.
"I'm a cleric, and I can help your friend."
"Then what are you waiting for?" shouted the wounded guard. "Quit fucking around and come help me."
"Oh," said Dave. I didn't know if..."
"Come on!"
shouted another guard.
"Okay,"
said Dave, hurrying into the cell. He laid one broad dwarven palm on the guard's sweating forehead.
"It will feel better soon."
The guard nodded his head, breathing shallowly and quickly.
"What happened?"
He winced in pain and then continued.
"To your arm."
"Shut up,"
said Dave, and slapped him in the forehead.
"I heal thee."
"I heal thee?"
one guard mouthed to another, who shrugged in response. Even the recipient of the spell looked questioningly at Dave, but only briefly. His head fell back as the spell began to take effect. He moaned as the redness of razor burn on his cheeks and neck disappeared, and he grew a fresh layer of healthy, smooth skin.
"Oh, that's nice,"
he said between moans. Julian knew exactly how he felt. He remembered when Dave had healed him. He'd felt brand new again. The guard clenched his teeth and closed his eyes when the healing power reached his mangled lower leg. He let out a cry and a shudder as the torn skin, muscles, tendons, and blood vessels fused back into a properly functioning mass of living flesh again.
"Darren, are you okay?"
asked the guard who had been supporting his head.
"By the gods," said Darren, his eyes still closed. "I think I just came."
Dave and the guard simultaneously removed their hands from his head, which fell back with a thud against the not overly soft mat on the bed.
"Ow!"
said Darren. Captain Righteous stood up, but remained in his cell.
"My uncle is a priest of Pelor," he said to Dave. "What god do you serve?"
"Me?"
asked Dave.
"Oh, well, I don't serve any gods. The book said I could just pick two domains."
"What the hell are you talking about?"
"I'm not really religious."
"You're a fucking cleric."
"Yeah, well..."
Dave paused, looking for the right words.
"The party needed a healer, and I happen to have a pretty high wisdom, so..."
Yes, said the captain. Your wisdom is overshadowed only by your modesty.
He sat back down on the edge of the bed.
This is what the world has come to, he muttered to himself. Godless fucking clerics.
Chapter 12.
What happened?
Asked Catherine, wincing and shutting her eyes against the sudden burst of sunshine. Birds chirped somewhere above her. That was odd. She felt around for something to support her and was surprised to grab hold of what felt like a tree. She cautiously opened her eyes and saw that she was, in fact, holding on to a tree.
Where am I?
She whispered. She looked around and saw only more trees. She was in a forest. That explained the birds well enough. But why was she in a forest? How did she get here? Why was she holding a sickle? What was that panting sound? She looked down, screamed, and dropped her sickle. A large gray wolf stared back at her with its sloppy pink tongue hanging out. She tried desperately to scramble up the trunk of the tree. She'd only made it about 3 feet up when her hand slipped. Her back collided with the soft earth below. She rolled over, grabbed her sickle, and held it threateningly at the wolf, which only continued to stare at her. Catherine stood up and bolted into the woods. The wolf trotted along behind her. She ran until the thought of running any further was less appealing than the thought of getting ripped apart by a wolf. Finally, she stopped to catch her breath. The wolf stood patiently next to her, not looking the least bit winded for its effort. Her arm instinctively jerked away when it tried to lick her hand, but then she relaxed. If it was going to kill her, it would have done so by now. She scratched under its chin, and it tilted its head back as if to offer her more chin to scratch.
"Do you know me?"
she asked. The last remnants of her fear evaporated entirely when she saw a man dressed in a comically oversized blue shirt, yellow and blue striped leggings, a large red floppy hat, complete with a giant green feather sticking out of it, materialize out of thin air about 40 feet away from her. She took a protective stance in front of the wolf before she even considered why she was doing it. Her hand, she was surprised to find, was wrapped around the handle of her sickle. Were these the battle reflexes her dad claimed to have developed in Vietnam? How would she have acquired battle reflexes? Whoever the man was, he didn't appear to have seen Catherine yet. He didn't appear to be able to see at all. He was stumbling around with his eyes closed. Catherine moved closer, keeping close to the trees. She wasn't exactly hiding behind them, but she was keeping the option open. When he finally opened his eyes, Catherine recognized the icy blue shine at once.
Chaz?
She asked.
Cat?
Answered her boyfriend.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Where are we? Why are you dressed like Conan the Barbarian?
Huh?
Said Catherine, and paused for the first time to look at what she was wearing. Her clothes were entirely made of leather. Not the shiny black leather you buy at the mall, but dull brown leather that gave you a crystal clear reminder of just where leather comes from. It was stitched together with what looked less like thread and more like rope. She shrugged. She'd worn worse.
Why are you dressed like you couldn't remember if the parade you were going to was for Mardi Gras or Gay Pride?
Chaz looked down at his own clothes.
What the fuck?
Then he looked back up at Catherine.
What happened to...
Catherine gasped.
Look at your arms. You're skinnier than me.
Chaz wrapped the fingers of his left hand around his right bicep. The tip of his middle finger nearly touched that of his thumb.
This can't be.
The wolf peeked its head out from behind the tree Catherine was standing next to.
What the fuck is that?
Shouted Chaz. The wolf growled and bared its teeth at Chaz. Catherine, who had momentarily forgotten it was there, was briefly startled again, but logic had time to interfere this time. If it meant to hurt her, it would have done so long before now.
Stop it!
She said to the wolf, and the wolf immediately stopped growling and sat down. She knelt down and reached a tentative hand out to touch it.
Cat!
Shouted Chaz.
Are you fucking nuts? That thing will rip your arm off.
He's friendly, said Catherine.
She let the wolf sniff her hand, but she still had to resist jerking it back when it licked her fingers. She patted it on the head, and it closed its eyes with obvious gratitude.
I think...
She paused, not having a clue as to why she felt this way.
I think he's mine.
You think he's yours? Asked Chaz. Do you remember going to the pet store and buying a fucking wolf?
Do you remember going clothes shopping at the Ladies Big and Tall shop?
No,
said Chaz, with more than a hint of panic in his voice.
And I don't remember walking into the woods, and I don't remember dating a girl who wore antlers on her head. What's going on here, Cat?
Catherine stopped petting the wolf and felt the top of her head. Sure enough, there were antlers up there, worked into the leather hood. She lowered the hood, and in doing so, her hands brushed against her ears, which she discovered were pointy at the tops.
What happened to my ears? She shouted. What's wrong with my ears?
They're pointed.
He put his hands up to his own ears, which were normal enough. His hands went from his ears to his shiny golden hair.
When the fuck did I grow hair?
It has a very nice shine and bounce, said Catherine, still feeling the points in her ears. I wouldn't have pegged you for a blonde.
I'm not, said Chaz.
He paused to think.
At least I wasn't.
He lifted up his shirt until he found the top of his pants. He pulled the front of his pants forward and looked down.
Holy shit! I guess I am now.
What happened to us? Asked Catherine. Where are we?
I don't know how it happened, said Chaz. But don't you think it's pretty obvious where we are?
Obvious? Catherine shouted back at him. No, Chaz, I don't, as a matter of fact. I'm wearing antlers on my head, my ears are deformed, and I've got a pet wolf. No obvious explanation for any of that comes to mind.
We're in the game.
What game?
Creatures and Caverns, said Chaz. The game your brother and his friends were playing.
This is how you play?
Not conventionally, no.
Then how do you know?
It's the only explanation as to why you're now an elf, and I'm a... What the fuck am I, anyway?
He looked down at his clothes again, pivoting his waist around to get a fuller view.
You've got something on your back, said Catherine.
Huh?
A broken guitar or something.
Chaz found the leather strap around his front and pulled the object up over his head, knocking his floppy hat off.
It's a lute, he said curiously. Why would I be... Oh, no.
He turned to the sky and shouted,
A fucking bard? Really?
Chaz, Catherine hissed. Keep your voice down. We don't really know what's going on here. What's the matter with you? What the hell is a bard?
A musician,
Chaz whined back at her.
What's wrong with that? Asked Catherine. You're a musician anyway.
You'll see what's wrong with it if we're attacked by ogres or something, and the best thing I can do is sing them a song.
So you're a bard, and you play music.
Catherine attempted to organize her thoughts.
And I'm an elf. What does an elf do?
Elf is a race.
Hold on a second. I'm not white anymore?
Catherine looked at her hands. They looked longer and more slender than usual, but they were white enough. Hell, they were whiter than the hands she was used to.
Not that kind of race.
So what race are you then?
I'm human, as far as I can tell.
So other races aren't human?
Catherine asked suspiciously.
Do people play this game in the north?
Chaz closed his eyes in exasperation.
You're thinking about races the wrong way.
I'm trying to think of them in a post-Civil War way.
I'm not talking about skin color, said Chaz. There could be black elves or Chinese dwarves or Mexican gnomes or whatever.
That sounded more racist than anything she'd ever heard before, but she was willing to give Chaz the benefit of the doubt. He had a couple of black friends, after all, and she had to admit there was a lot she had no idea about right now.
Okay, fine, she said. So, you're a human, but you're also a bard.
Like I said, human is my race, bard is my class, he explained. Just like you might have a guy who's a Jew, but he's also an accountant, or a guy who's black, but he's also a janitor.
Chaz!
Oh, shit, sorry, Chaz said. That came out wrong.
For fuck's sake, said Catherine. I get it. Just stop talking. So your class is like, what, your job?
Something like that.
So what's my class? She asked, looking at the sickle she was still holding. Farmer?
My guess would either be ranger or druid.
Why?
I'm trying to remember, said Chaz. It's been a while since I've played, he thought. You seem to be a woodsy type. Leather and antlers and all that shit. You're in tune with nature.
But I hate nature, argued Catherine. I got so pissed off at my dad that time he took us camping instead of to the beach on our vacation.
Look deep inside yourself, said Chaz. Right now, do you really hate nature?
Yes,
said Catherine. I do. It's dirty and smelly and full of bugs and spiders and shit.
Okay, said Chaz. If you hate nature so much, why don't you rip this little sapling out of the ground?
Why the hell would I do that?
It was a rhetorical question. I'm challenging you to rip this tree out of the ground right now.
What's the point? Asked Catherine. This is stupid.
Fine, said Chaz. Then I'll do it.
He stepped toward the sapling and was met with the point of Catherine's sickle at his throat.
Jesus Christ,
he said, putting his hands up. Oh my God, I'm so sorry, she said. She lowered her sickle and Chaz backed away. She leaned against a tree and her hand involuntarily caressed the bark. I guess I really do love nature.
Well, said Chaz, that settles that. You're either a ranger or a druid.
I don't know what either of those are.
I think a ranger is just a fighter who likes to live in the woods or something, said Chaz. I remember he has a favorite enemy. Is there any sort of creature or race that you feel a particular hatred for?
Are you asking if I'm a racist? Asked Catherine. Are you sure you're not a ranger? Chaz lowered his head.
I guess I walked right into that one.
He thought some more, running a hand through his shiny golden hair.
If you're a druid, you should be able to use magic. Can you use magic?
Sure, she said. She grabbed the wooden medallion hanging from a chain around her neck. It had the image of a tree carved into it, the leaves composed of clusters of tiny emeralds. She pointed it at the ground and said, Canis lupus! A gray wolf suddenly came into being on the ground where she had pointed her medallion.
Jesus,
said Chaz. Holy shit, said Catherine. How did I do that?
You're asking me?
I can do fucking magic. The wolf looked around, looked up at Catherine, briefly regarded the other wolf, and then vanished. Kind of disappointing, really, said Catherine.
What are you talking about? Asked Chaz. That was fucking awesome. What else can you do?
Catherine held her medallion in one hand. With the other, she reached into a small pouch on her belt and pulled out a bit of glowing moss. She held it up and looked at it for a moment, and then placed it at the top of her sickle. Luminous, she said, and a sphere of light glowed on top of the sickle. Chaz shrugged.
That's pretty cool, too.
They watched the light for a few seconds, waiting for it to vanish like the wolf had, but it continued to glow. It wasn't particularly useful right now, in the middle of the day. In fact, if they weren't in the woods right now, but rather out in the open sunlight, it's likely they would barely be able to tell if it was working at all. It would probably come in handy if they had to travel at night. Catherine waved her sickle around. The light remained attached to the top of it. Well, I guess this one's going to stick around for a while, she said. So what can you do?
I can play this, said Chaz, holding up his lute. And I guess I can sing.
Okay, said Catherine. Play me something. Chaz took a couple of test strums on the instrument. Pretty soon, his fingers took over and plucked the strings more quickly and elegantly than Catherine thought possible. The song wasn't one that Catherine was familiar with, but she had to admit it moved her. I didn't know you were that talented, said Catherine.
I'm not,
said Chaz. He stopped playing and looked closely at his hands. What was that song?
I don't know. It just came to me.
It was really good, said Catherine.
Thanks.
Seriously, she said. It was amazing. I think if you wrote some lyrics for that, you could get a recording contract or something.
You think so?
Excuse me,
said a voice that made both Chaz and Catherine start and scream. Catherine tightened the grasp of her sickle, and Chaz throttled the neck of his lute, brandishing it like a weapon. They both turned toward the direction the voice had come from, and didn't see many likely candidates for a source. A large, black bird stared back at them from a low branch of a nearby tree.
I'm sorry, said the bird. I didn't mean to startle you. I saw your light and heard your music. That was lovely, by the way.
Thanks,
said Chaz.
I, said the bird. I don't suppose that either of you are named Tim.
Catherine responded immediately, not caring in the least bit that she was talking to a bird. What do you know about Tim? Where is he?
I'm sorry, said the bird. I don't understand a word you're saying.
What do you mean you don't understand us? Catherine shouted back at the bird. We're speaking the same language.
Said
the bird.
What's the best way to put this?
He flapped his wings and shook his head. When he spoke again, his speech was slower, louder, and very carefully articulated.
I'm
sorry. I don't speak your language.
I think he's fucking with you,
said Chaz. Catherine was growing more and more frustrated. This was her only clear opportunity to find information about her missing brother and to find out what the hell was going on.
Listen, you stupid fucking bird, she said more slowly and deliberately than normal, but not to the extent of which the bird had spoken to her.
She was, however, speaking much louder than he was.
We are both speaking English.
I'm sorry, said the bird. I haven't had the ability to speak for very long, you see. I only know the elven language, so if either of you know that, I would be very grateful if you could—
Do you know elven?
Chaz asked Catherine, interrupting the bird.
I don't think so, said Catherine. What's elven?
The language of the elves.
Why the fuck would I know the language of the elves?
Because you're an elf.
One of Catherine's hands involuntarily went back up to her ear, feeling the point on the top.
Oh, yeah, she said. Maybe I do. I mean, I must if I can understand what it's saying, right?
Makes sense to me,
said Chaz.
Then how do I speak elven?
I don't know. Maybe try a British accent.
What difference would that make?
We're in a game world, said Chaz. When people play these games, they aren't expected to actually learn all the languages their characters know. Sometimes they roleplay it by using different accents to represent different languages.
Those people will die alone.
Give it a try.
Why don't you give it a try? You could understand it.
It's not my brother we're looking for.
You know what? Said Catherine. You really are a piece of shit.
Chaz had no response to this accusation.
Fine, said Catherine. I'll do my best.
She looked at the bird. The bird was looking back expectantly and impatiently.
Good day, matey.
Chaz cringed.
That was more of a cross between Australian and pirate.
Talk to that bird right now, or you're going to be wearing that fucking loot.
Fine, said Chaz. I'll have to warm up first.
He looked at the bird.
I am Arthur, King of the Britons.
King of the who?
Asked the bird.
King of the Wait, is that a serious question?
It worked, said Catherine. You were talking to it.
I'm sorry to bother you, Your Majesty, said Ravenous to Chaz. I was just looking for—
I'm not really a king.
Well then, that's a very odd way to start a conversation.
I'm not really a king, Catherine repeated, trying to get a fix on the accent.
I wouldn't have suspected so, Miss Tim, is it?
The bird asked hopefully.
No, said Catherine. Tim is my brother.
The bird turned to Chaz.
I thought you said your name is Arthur.
No, it's not. I was just—
So you're Tim, then?
No, I'm Chaz.
Then who the fuck is Tim?
The bird spread his wings and ruffled his feathers in frustration.
Tim is my brother, said Catherine. This is Chaz, who is not my brother.
I'm her boyfriend, said Chaz.
Let's not get carried away, said Catherine. My name is Catherine. We're looking for Tim.
I'm Ravenous.
You know, said Chaz, I wouldn't mind grabbing something to eat either.
We'll get some food later. Right now, we've got to find Tim.
Right, said Ravenous. I was told to look for him at the campsite. That's about a quarter of a mile away.
How do you know Tim? Asked Catherine.
I don't. He's a friend of my master.
Who's your master?
Julian?
Who the hell is Julian?
Catherine murmured to herself. Then she remembered that there was a player in the chicken hut who she hadn't met before, a guy who had come with Cooper.
Does Julian hang around with a couple of other guys?
Yes,
said Ravenous.
Do you know what their names are?
She asked, not wanting the bird to just agree to information that she was feeding it.
Hmm,
said Ravenous.
I don't recall exactly. Julian introduced them to me once, but they don't speak elven, and I wasn't paying much attention. I want to say Wiggles and Jing Jing.
Dave and Cooper,
Catherine suggested. Ravenous brightened up.
Yes, that's them.
Why aren't they all together?
I don't know,
said Ravenous.
I came in after Tim was gone. I don't know the whole story, but I think they went to rescue Tim from prison. But he'd already escaped, and then they got caught in prison. So I'm supposed to find Tim and get him to rescue them.
They couldn't have been here more than a few hours, and they're all in prison already. I'll bet anything this is Cooper's fault. What a fucking moron.
Is he the giant one with the tusks?
What? Asked Catherine. I don't think so. Then she thought about her own pointed ears. I don't know. Maybe.
Farts a lot and shits himself sometimes.
Probably.
Yeah, he strikes me as kind of dumb.
It's starting to get kind of late in the afternoon, said Chaz. If we're going to find Tim at this campsite, we should probably make our way there.
The trip didn't take long before Ravenous said,
Well, this is the place.
Catherine was surprised to find that she didn't need to be told that. She spotted details that she didn't even realize she knew to look for. Flattened patches of grass, a couple of broken twigs, a mutilated leopard corpse.
What the fuck is that?
Ravenous flew down to inspect the leopard more closely. He pecked at a bit of exposed flesh.
It's still fresh, he said. I'd say it hasn't been dead more than a day.
What happened to its leg?
Asked Chaz.
Dunno, said Ravenous. I think Dave was wearing it.
Wearing what?
The leg. He had a leopard skin armband on his forearm when I first met him.
They've gone feral, said Catherine. They haven't been here more than a couple of hours, and they've gone all Lord of the Flies.
Do you think leopard meat is okay to eat?
Asked Chaz.
What?
Said Catherine.
I mean, we need to eat something. The bird said the meat was fresh. I've mentioned I'm hungry. And he said he's ravenous.
Ravenous!
Ravenous corrected.
That's what I said.
No, you said ravenous.
What did you say?
Ravenous!
As in very hungry, right?
No, as in my name. It's a play on words. I'm a raven, you see. It's supposed to be a sort of Latin-sounding, but also fierce kind of thing.
Oh, right, said Chaz. I get it. Clever.
Thank you,
said Ravenous smugly.
So does that mean you're not hungry?
I could eat.
I'm not eating fucking leopard, shouted Catherine. We need to look for my brother.
Calm down, Chaz said. We'll find him. The bird, I'm sorry. Ravenous said your brother is due to be coming back this way eventually. The best thing we can do is to wait here, build a fire, and wait for him. Then when he gets here, we can have some leopard meat already cooked up for him. If he just broke out of prison, he'll be hungry.
You're going to listen to a fucking bird?
I beg your pardon, Miss Catherine, said Ravenous. I'm no ordinary bird.
What makes you so special?
I talk.
That's true.
Listen to him, said Chaz. He speaks British English. That means he's smart, right? Like a librarian or some shit.
Catherine looked at Chaz through narrowed eyes, unable to respond. She opened her mouth to respond anyway, but Ravenous cut her off.
Listen, Miss Catherine, he said. I understand you're worried, but wandering around in the woods is only going to make matters worse. If it helps alleviate your anxiety, I'll fly around and scout the area while you two get a fire going.
All right, said Catherine grudgingly. Go ahead. I'll get the fire going. Ravenous flew off, disappearing into the trees. I'll go get some firewood, said Catherine. You stay here and see if you can find anything useful in our bags.
Don't go too far, said Chaz. It could be dangerous out there.
Don't worry about me, Catherine said, bending down on one knee to pet her wolf on the head. I've got more to protect me than a banjo. She stood up and walked out of the clearing, with her wolf following loyally at her side. We're going to have to think of a name for you. Chapter 13. The few small patches of light that showed through the forest canopy were beginning to change from blue to purple, and Chaz began to feel uneasy about being left alone. One small comfort he found was that it felt really good.